Neftali Rodriguez is the CEO of the Camaraderie Foundation. The Camaraderie Foundation is a Central Florida nonprofit that helps fund counselling and other support services for members of the armed services and veterans who served post 9/11 and their family members. Rodriguez served in the U.S. Army during Operation Desert Storm in Iraq, and after retiring from the Army, he worked later as a contractor to help train members of the Afghan National Army. Nef Rodriguez, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate being here to be able to talk about our veterans and their needs.
Indeed. So this month obviously marks 20 years since the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center and the start of the war in Afghanistan. What are you thinking about as you reflect on 9/11 itself and also the impact that that attack had on the United States and the world?
Well, it's actually, if you think about it, you've got people now, or young men, young women, who enlisted the day the towers were attacked and collapsed, you know, and wanted to defend their country. And this weekend, they are now eligible for a 20-year military retirement. So they've now spent an entire military career in a war footing for their entire career.
Is this date a challenging time for service members and veterans? And can it be kind of like a triggering thing for some of the individuals and families that you work with your nonprofit?
Oh, absolutely. And there are many, many triggers. For people who've never had PTSD, I like to tell them, if you've ever driven along and you've heard a song and it brought back a happy memory, or if you had a smell, you know, maybe cookies cooking or a cake baking, and it brought back a happy memory of your mom or your grandmom cooking, you know, that is what happens with PTSD, except it's the negative side of it. It's the nightmares. It's the night terrors of things, you know, brings back horrible memories. And so that is just like what a PTSD individual goes through. It's not something that happens, you know, just deliberately. It's just something triggers it. And so we have triggering events. Could be the 4th of July. It could be a mass shooting like we had in Las Vegas. It could have been this last weekend that we had in Lakeland. Or, you know, it could just be an anniversary of something that they saw happen, either a suicide bombing in Afghanistan or an IED attack. So all those things trigger the PTSD. And so we're starting to see an increase now, especially since the war is winding down. Well, now it's actually over. And so the thing that's triggering the young men and young women we're seeing is that for 20 years, they were always told, thank you for your service. You know, you've done a great job. You know, they got the opposite of what happened to Vietnam veterans when they returned. And now they're being compared to Vietnam veterans. Okay, we've lost the war. You know, and so I tried to tell them, you didn't lose the war any more than the Vietnam veterans did. You know, it was, you know, like I like to say, blame the suits, not the boots. You know, you guys did exactly what you were asked to do. But they do internalize it. They take it personal because it was a sense of pride. It was a mission for them. And so that is a triggering event for them, too.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could talk in a little more detail, Nef, about the Camaraderie Foundation, how it was formed and the kind of work that you'll do.
Well, it was formed in 2009 by Michael and Marty Waldrop, and Michael was a captain serving in Afghanistan and was wounded, and he saw his soldiers when he came back, you know, going through these invisible wounds of war, suffering with them. You know, divorce rate was high, suicide rates were going up, and so he felt that there was something that he had to do to help them, and so he and Marty started the organization out of their kitchen, and for the first 2 years they started doing. I think the first year they did 9 veterans. And so each year we have grown exponentially. I'm starting my third year now with them because I came back out of Afghanistan and retired. And so now I'm here doing this. But we are now up to serving 300 veterans in a year. And that's new veterans because we still manage some from the previous year. So at any one time, we could have 500 to 600 veterans in our system.
And these are all veterans who've done their service post 9/11.
Yes, it is post 9/11, and you know, because Michael was a post 9/11 veteran, that's what we wanted to serve. And because we were so limited on funding, you know, if you just opened it up to everyone, you know, we can barely serve the 9/11 veterans right now. And so we do want to do that. And if I can get the funding up to where it needs to be, we will open it up to all the veterans.
How much do you need? Like, what's the deficit you're looking at right now?
Well, right now we're just basically staying at an even plane. We're serving the 350 that we need to serve. You know, we're trying to build a reserve so that we have funds available, because it does cycle. You know, at the beginning of the year, our funds are low because we've exhausted them all throughout the year. And then we had to go in that rebuilding phase. And so my intent for this year is to try and level out that playing field so that we don't have those peaks and valleys. And to do that, we've created a program called the Colonel's Club, where anybody can donate on a recurring monthly basis. And so you can donate, say, $11 in honor of 9/11, or $22 a month in honor of the 22 that commit suicide every day, or $5 a month, whatever. And that will give us a foundation to build on. And so that's the goal.
That number there makes me pause. 22 suicides a day, that's nationwide?
Yes, there's 22 veterans that commit suicide daily. That's one every 65 minutes. And that's been going on, good grief, since the whole war, just about 22 a day. And the interesting thing about that, there are some people who say, well, it's really 21. You know, I don't want to quibble with the numbers, but I will tell you that the three top states that have the highest population of veterans do not monitor whether the suicide is a veteran or not. So California, Texas, it was Florida. Florida has now passed the law where they are tracking suicides by veteran status. And so we're no longer in that category, but you got the two biggest states and they are not tracking. So even without their numbers, you're looking at 22 a day. So it's probably more than that.
That's pretty sobering. And I guess it sort of must reinforce the sense of mission that you have leading this organization and trying to sort of build it out so you can help more people.
Oh, absolutely. This is a mission that's near and dear to my heart. You know, not because only, you know, I served for over 30 years, and so I have a lot of soldiers, a lot that I care about. But I also have two sons that followed in my footsteps. And my second son was actually hit with two IEDs in Iraq. And so he was medically retired. He killed three of his friends in his vehicle. He has PTSD along with the physical injuries. And so, you know, they start mixing alcohol or drugs when the medication they get from the VA or their doctor doesn't make that physical and mental pain go away, doesn't ease it. They start mixing and medicating themselves. And so that causes a very bad combination of mixing medication with alcohol.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Neff Rodriguez. He's the CEO of the Camaraderie Foundation, which helps veterans and members of the armed services enduring post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, just on that note, what about attitudes both within the armed forces, families, and officialdom towards those folks who are suffering with PTSD and what you refer to as the invisible wounds of war? Has that changed a lot, do you think, in the last 20 years since the start of the ground war in Afghanistan?
I think it has. I think that the senior leadership realizes, you know, that this is a real problem and has to be addressed. And they have done things to promote that. I know Sergeant Major of the Army, Ray Chandler, when he was the Sergeant Major, he pushed it and admitted, you know, look, guys, you know, I have problems. I've gone and got counseling. And so that was a good example to set for the troops, because they were able to see, you know, hey, look, Sergeant Major of the Army is going to get counseling. It can't be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And so it did address the tone. The problem is that, like, you had the young man who shot up the church in Texas from the Air Force. And, you know, the first thing everybody wanted to do was the Air Force didn't do anything about it. They knew he had PTSD. Why didn't they flag him? Why didn't they do something? You know, why didn't they take away his weapon? And so, of course, the military has to respond to those types of, you know, views. Mm-hmm. And so now you have soldiers who don't want to admit that they have problems, because the first thing that's going to happen is, especially if I'm a special operator, is I'm going to lose my clearance. They're going to take away my weapon. They're going to take away my stuff. So I'm not going to tell anybody I have a problem. And so right now we are seeing a 47% of our clients are from active duty.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you're saying it's a bit of a balancing act in terms of like how you approach getting folks to kind of talk about whatever issues they may be dealing with?
Well, we have to be very careful. We are HIPAA compliant, so I cannot report whether they are, you know, seeking mental health. And in the same case, too, they won't let their families go get help. Because if you have a wife and a child who are going to seek mental health for PTSD, then there's, you know, where did it come from? Well, evidently it came from the veteran, because it does affect the entire family. And so, you know, they don't let their family members, because that will give them away as a red flag to their command, too. And so they do like to come to us because of that that confidentiality they have. And so we won't report it. We don't. And they can come to us, get the help that they need, get seen, and get taken care of. And so they will go and tell each other by word of mouth, you know, hey, if you need help, go to Camaraderie Foundation. They'll take care of you. And we do.
So what's your advice to people who may be dealing with some difficulties, particularly now, reflecting on the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and, you know, marking 20 years since 9/11 as well?
I would tell them, if it's causing issues for you that you're not capable of handling, then, you know, by all means, please call, please seek assistance, you know, whether it's Camaraderie Foundation or any of the other foundations. And all of the veteran organizations, you know, are doing a good job of what they do. We all do different things. You've got, you know, Wounded Warrior that's out there. You've got all these other organizations. The thing that we do well is, number one, we do the entire family unit. Mm-hmm. So we don't just do the veteran. So mom, dad, the caregivers, the wife, the children, if they're not married, we don't care if it's a significant other. Whatever that veteran identifies as his family unit, because they're going to get those secondary and tertiary effects of PTSD from being around the veteran. Mm-hmm. So we will serve them. The other thing that we don't do is we don't worry about their character of discharge. So if you have a bad conduct or a dishonorable discharge, you can't be seen by the VA. Mm-hmm. Because you're, by their definition, you're not a veteran. And so we don't worry about that, because what we're finding is that a lot of young men and women are getting in trouble in the military. They get a bad conduct discharge or a dishonorable discharge. And then we find out that there was an underlying undiagnosed PTSD issue, which caused the behavior that got them put out. Mm-hmm. And now they can't get help for the problem that put them out. Hmm. So it's catch 22. So as long as you serve one day post 9/11, we take care of them.
You spent a number of years working in Afghanistan with their national army. What's been going through your mind with respect to the end of the U.S. ground war and thinking about some of the Afghan service members that you would have worked with?
To be honest with you, I am completely shocked and devastated that it collapsed so quickly. Something happened, and I don't know what it was. I knew a lot of the general officers. I knew a lot of the mid-level officers. I knew a lot of the low ranks. I would train 600 to 700 Afghan nationals every 12 weeks. And so we were teaching them how to do infantry tactics. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened. I don't know why it collapsed so quickly, but there was something there going on. But it's tough to say. Even I am struggling with this. And so, you know, I can understand how the other veterans are, too. I wish they had stand and fought for their country. But I've always believed that we should not be in nation building process, because you can't export democracy like you do milk and eggs. It's not a tangible product. It's something that people have to want. And, if they don't want it, they're not going to fight for it.
Finally, you have a fundraising gala coming up this Saturday. Tell me a little bit about what you're going to be doing there.
We have the American Patriot Gala. It is for Patriot Day, September 11th. They've been doing it for, this is the 12th year now. So they've been doing it for a while. We will be honoring our donors and supporters and recognizing that this is the 20th anniversary. We have veterans that are going to be there that we've asked to come as guests to sit at the tables with the people who are going to be there. And, you know, they'll be able to reflect and talk about their stories. And it is our big fundraiser for the year. And so we're hoping that it does pull in the funds to help us with the rest of the year and set the tone for next year.
You know, with the final end of the ground war, at least in Afghanistan, are you anticipating that you're going to be a lot busier in the near term because you're going to have, there are going to be more people coming back to Florida and needing help for, you know, whatever issues they may be dealing with?
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest fears that we have is that, you know, everybody now is like, okay, the war is over, you know, let's go to the next thing and just forget about it, you know, because it is over in their mind. But it, again, like you were just pointing out, you know, the mission for us is just beginning, really, because now you've got all these people coming home with all these thoughts and all these, you know, things that have happened to them and the things that they're struggling with. And so they're having a hard time, and that's just beginning. And it's not a quick end. You never solve or cure PTSD. You just teach them how to manage it and how to cope with it in a positive way rather than taking those feelings and turning them into a negative way. Because we, every year, you know, while they were over there, we'd send them care packages of candy and cookies and whatever stuff. You know, and now that they're back home, let's not forget about them. And this is when they really need us, you know, more than cookies and candies. They need help.
Well, Neftali Rodriguez, CEO of the Camaraderie Foundation. Neft, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.